everyone, and welcome to Minute 23 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today on this lovely Wednesday morning is J-Dub of Dubsism. Welcome back to the show, J-Dub.
And thanks for having me back, Rob.
Hopefully we'll have some more interesting stories to talk about today that won't be as gross as some of the ones we discussed yesterday, but you never know. You never know where things are going to lead. So this minute 23, begins with Del cracking his knuckles and ends with Neil throwing the covers off and jumping up from the bed. So as we see, things there's a slow burn here. We see Neil's face the entire time by all the things that Del is doing that are annoying him. And we get to see Del doing them all in the background. So yesterday we ended by Del cracking his knuckles, and this time he actually cracks his head, which they actually show for 7 whole seconds. We get to see him cracking his head, which is completely absurd. That's a
you never
long.
Cracked your neck before?
We all of course about I did. It. No, of course I did, but not. It's just funny that they're showing us 7 seconds of him cracking his head. Cracking
that's
his neck.
A 4-hour script.
That's true also. That's true. Now, what do you know about neck cracking?
Old football player, every joint in my body is somehow destroyed. I crack things all the time, and sometimes I don't even mean to. I've cracked my neck yawning.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, obviously, neck cracking is something that is commonly used by chiropractors. Okay, its official name is cervical spine manipulation. Okay, some chiropractors believe that it is not high risk and that the rate of injury caused by it is very low. But there are risks and side effects associated with it. So some chiropractors actually believe that these risks outweigh the possible benefits of neck cracking. Okay, I found 4 risks. Do you have any guess as to what risks this might cause by cracking your neck?
Well, the first is kind of a question. That is, when I just said that I've cracked my own neck yawning, so by your terminology, I'm actually manipulating myself. So risks of cervical manipulation, like, is it possible to break your own neck?
No. So, all right, I'll just tell you what they are. All right, the first one is the risk of a stroke. Okay. It says, although cases are rare, neck cracking can tear the vertebral artery, which supplies blood to the brain. This tear can cause a stroke. Individuals who have a habit of neck cracking are more prone to having a stroke. This is particularly common to those people under the age of 60. Okay. Sorry to get you scared there.
Well, I'm not going to be under 60 for that much longer, so I'll take my chances.
All right. The second problem could be blood clotting. Neck cracking has caused some cases of blood clotting in the neck. This is very dangerous because it can stop the oxygen supply to the brain. The third problem is osteoarthritis. Cracking the neck puts pressure on the joints. When this is done a lot, it can lead to instability in the neck and in turn to osteoarthritis, a condition where the tissue at the end of the bones becomes weaker. Osteoarthritis is a painful and irreversible condition. And the fourth problem that one could have with this is lack of mobility. Each time your neck is cracked, it can cause damage to the connective tissue in the spine. Over time, this can reduce mobility and may actually lead to arthritis. So that's what I found from it. It's not going to stop any of us from cracking our necks, but, you know, Del did it, so he's doing a nice job. And once again, he continues moaning and grunting and sighing as he's doing all these things.
So now that I mentioned that every time, you know, there are times that I yawn and my neck cracks, so now, thanks to you, all I can think of is every time I yawn, I'm just rolling the dice.
Well, that's the way it is. Everything we do in life is rolling the dice.
Have a stroke. Oh, yeah. Neck immobility. Okay, all right.
Yeah, sorry about that. Sorry for putting that one in your mind.
Well, you know, caring is caring.
Yeah, and then we get a shot once again of Susan back in bed, back in her comfortable house, with a very large bed with lots of pillows, waiting for her husband to come home. And we see that she's once again still listening to the TV. Now, first of all, what time is it? This must be really in the middle of the night,
And also, depending on if they're in Missouri, Kansas, we kind of never really established that. But to me, like, if are they far enough away? Like, I know that she's in Chicago, but is she one of those Chicago suburbs that's actually in, Indiana, so it's on a different time zone? Or, I don't know.
No, but even if it's on the same time zone, I mean, this is clearly the middle of the night. But she's listening to the TV, and the TV, we hear the reporter say traffic is resuming at O'Hare Field, because as earlier we saw, O'Hare Airport was actually closed. So if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, they're telling people that traffic is resuming at O'Hare Field and the flights will be moving out of there very shortly at 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't know.
Well, not to get overly nerdy here about air travel, but a lot of airlines in this country now and at that time operate off what's called the hub and spoke system. So a lot of times they have to get airplanes from one airport in the middle of the night. Like your flight lands at O'Hare at 11 o'clock at night, but then your flight goes to another place where it gets maintenance, refueled, whatever, and then you board that flight, or in another city, somebody else boards that flight at 8 in the morning.
Right, that's true. Right, but there would the reporter be talking about empty planes, or are they talking about full planes? I mean, everyone is stranded in O'Hare; they couldn't get out. So, they are getting out, let's say, at 2 o'clock in the morning. So it is possible that instead of canceling those flights, they were waiting for the weather to clear up a bit. Now, there's a theory, back when you go to the beginning of this movie, where Neil is talking with his friend John Dole, played by Ferris Bueller's father, right? So there is a theory that if he would have waited and taken the 8 o'clock flight with John, he would have gotten home. But this scene actually proves that theory impossible, because this is not early enough that John would have been able to land. He would have, if he would have taken off from New York, he wouldn't have landed in Chicago. He might not have made it all the way to Wichita, but he'd have to wait until the following day to get a flight that would actually get him into Chicago. So, I mean, you're from Indiana, if I remember correctly, right?
I live in Indiana,
You
yes.
live in Indiana, right? So what do you know about O'Hare Airport?
Okay, well, if you want your off the beaten track story a smidge early, here it comes. Back in the
No,
day, this is
let's hold that up. Let's hold that up. We'll keep
let's
it
hold that up.
at
Okay,
the end. We'll keep it
that's because
more.
that's okay. So what I know about O'Hare Airport, long story short, O'Hare Airport is actually one of Dante's concentric rings of hell.
Okay. All right, that's an interesting point, and I'm sure that you're going to explain
Well,
that a little bit later.
I'm actually making an in podcast note right here, because O'Hare Airport, I actually was not even going to bring that up in
Oh,
my
wow.
off the beaten track stories, but since you brought that up, you already got the toenail story,
Right.
so
That's true. So O'Hare International Airport opened in February 1944. It was used as an air base before that. Okay, its original name was the Orchard Field, and then it was changed to O'Hare Field because it was built in an orchard. That's
And
the
that's
land
orchard
that
is
they.
why its international airport designation is ORD.
That is correct. I was going to get there, so thank you for mentioning that beforehand. There are currently. They have 228 destinations that go out of O'Hare on a daily basis in North America, South America, Europe, Africa, Asia, and Oceania. Okay. It was originally designed as a successor for Midway Airport, and it is now nicknamed the busiest square mile in the world. Okay. Now, it was the world's busiest airport from 1963 to 1998. And today it is the sixth busiest airport, serving 83 million passengers in 2018. Okay. In 2019, there were almost 920,000 aircraft movements, averaging 2,500 a day. The most of any airport in this part of the world, because of the large number of regional flights that they have there. Okay. It is serves as the hub for both United Airlines and American Airlines. And it is the focus city for Frontier Airlines and Spirit Airlines. Now, one thing I never thought of, I mean, I've known of O'Hare Airport for many, many years. I never thought who it's named after. Do you know who O'Hare was?
Have you ever been at O'Hare Airport?
Yes.
Okay.
But I
You're
haven't been
probably.
in years. It's been
Okay.
years.
In one of the concourses, there is a statue of an old Grumman F-4F fighter aircraft from World War II.
In Terminal
O'Hare,
2. That's in Terminal 2.
it's a Terminal 2. Okay.
Yes.
Well, if you if there's there's a plaque on it, the pilot of that aircraft was a military aviator in World War II named O'Hare. And he
Yes,
was killed during the war.
Edward Henry O'Hare.
Edward Henry O'Hare, correct.
Yes, very good.
So,
And
yeah.
he was actually the first American naval aviator, okay, to become a he was the Navy's first fighter ace in World War II. Because on a mission on February 20th, 1942, he shot down nine heavy bombers approaching his aircraft carrier. Okay, even though he had limited amount of ammunition, he was credited with shooting down five enemy bombers and became the first naval aviator recipient of the Medal of Honor during World War II.
Okay.
Okay, a year and a half later, on November 26, 1943, when he was leading the U.S. Navy's first ever nighttime fighter attack that was launched from an aircraft carrier, he had an encounter with Japanese torpedo bombers, and his plane was shot down. And his aircraft was actually never found. Okay. In 1945, the U.S. Navy destroyer USS O'Hare was named in his honor. And in 1949, the Chicago Area Orchard Depot Airport, ODA, right? Oh, no. So it's their designation is OR, ORC, right?
ORD.
ORD, ORD, right? Oh, because Orchard Depot. Okay. So they renamed it 6 years after he died. They renamed the airport for him. And as you mentioned, in Terminal 2, there is a plaque and memorial for him. Now, do you know who his father was?
Mr. O'Hare?
Yes. So, Mr. O'Hare, Edward Joseph O'Hare, was known as Easy Eddie. He was a lawyer in St. Louis and later in Chicago, where he was working for Al Capone. And later helped federal prosecutors convict Capone of tax evasion. Okay, in 1939, a week before Capone was released from Alcatraz, O'Hare was shot to death while driving. So I found it very interesting. So, there's a lot to know about O'Hares. All right.
Who'd have
So
thought a guy
then,
that was involved with Al Capone would end up being shot to death?
yeah, that his son, and again, this happened 4 years before his son was killed in action. So yeah, so we get to see Susan continue to sleep in bed, and then we jump back to the motel, and we see Dell trying to clear his sinuses, and making making a lot of noise by doing it.
Okay, now this part has recent sensitivity for me. I know originally we had another time where we were going to do this podcast recording, and I had to bail out on you because I had a sinus infection. So I
Postpone,
spent
postpone, postpone.
postponed. I spent 2 days making that exact Del Griffith noise. It's not fun. Trust me.
Okay, can you think of reasons why people will clear their throats?
Breathing. That's a good one. That's what was my issue.
Right, I'm just going to list them. I'm not going to go into too much detail about them, but so what I found is there are nine general causes that people will clear their throats in the middle of the night. One is reflux, okay, where you have things coming back up. Postnasal drainage, which I believe is what you were dealing with your sinus infection, right?
Whatever you say, Dr. Rob.
Okay, I'm definitely not a doctor, trust me. And I don't even play one on TV. Zenker's diverticulum. It's where the esophagus has an abnormal pouch that prevents food from traveling to the stomach.
Sure.
And Food and mucus gets stuck in the throat. Okay. Chronic motor tic disorder. So it's where people have different tics and they need to do that. Tourette syndrome. I never thought about that. I mean, I know what Tourette's is. I never thought that people would actually need to all the time, clear their throats because of it. That's something that I would thought of. Pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorder with streptococcus, which is known as PANDAS. It's similar. It's something that kids get after strep and scarlet fever in children, and they constantly have to clear their throats. Then we have food allergies. Some people will get a tickling in their throat based on a food allergy that they have. They say
Would a
they've
sponge allergy do that?
maybe it depends on how much sponge Dell is actually eating. Yeah.
I'm not going to make the John Candy fat joke. I'm not going to do it.
Okay. A side effect of medication, which I actually once had there was medication that I took, I think maybe it was like 15 years ago or something like that. I don't remember what it was for. And I remember that I was constantly having to clear my throat, especially at night, which was a problem. And the ninth reason is habit. This one, I'm actually going to read what it says. In some cases, there may be no underlying condition causing the throat clearing. Instead, it may be a habit or something you subconsciously do when you're anxious or stressed. The following techniques may help you to stop the habit. Drink more fluids, monitor your throat clearing, or ask someone to help you monitor it, or find an alternative activity such as swallowing or tapping your fingers. So that's pretty interesting. So he just spends a lot of time trying to clear his throat, trying to clear his nose with the whole thing. And again, we get to see how annoyed Neil is getting by all of this. And I mean, there's one point where he looks like where Dell is putting his lips in a certain position where it looks like it reminds me of like a bear when you see a bear in a movie, giving out a big roar and you see his like lips flap and stuff like that. So that reminded me of that. And we see this all from, once again, Neil's perspective, or behind. We see Neil and we see Dell in the background, and then Neil just puts his hands on his eyes and just sighs in relief. Sigh, not even in relief. He's just sighing, basically saying to himself, "When is this going to be over?" And he tries to get a little more sleep, and then Dell just continues, and he just completely makes a lot of noise the whole time,
And
and
see,
he.
my thought here,
And he keeps
my thought,
apologizing too.
well, yes, because he's politely annoying, like I
Yeah.
discussed earlier. My thought here is out of the nine reasons, Dell is clearly a habit throat clearer because, like you said, with the bear analogy, he's got a technique for this. There's an approach. He has way too much practice doing this to have just be doing it because he has a pouch in his throat or whatever else one of those reasons were. He
Yeah.
does this on purpose.
Completely. There's no question about that. And Neil just gets so upset that you see him throw back the covers and he starts to get up. And that's how this minute actually ends. Do you have anything else for this minute before we get to the script?
Well, that the minute that he throws back the blanket is what I like to call the John Hughes slow burn, which is from, the vacation movies. Because Neil and Clark Griswold got a couple of things in common here. If you notice, Neil is just taking it and he's taking it and he's taking it. And finally, when he throws back the blanket, this is about to get real because when he throws back the blanket, he's going to hop out of bed and we're going to finally have the showdown, which when you go back to the vacation movies, it's, Clark Griswold takes it, takes it, takes it. And then we have the great profanity-filled tirade when he snaps.
Yeah.
And so if you watch this movie like we did minute by minute, and you cut it off when he throws about the blanket, you're both sitting there going, oh, I bet this is when the tirade's coming.
Yeah. But people have to wait till tomorrow to see where that goes.
That's absolutely right. So
Right.
tune in tomorrow.
Well, we're not
Not
done
yet,
yet.
because we're not done yet.
So then we first of all, we have a few slight discrepancies in the script. The script is actually, it's a little bit out of order at this point. So they have a conversation. It says Neil turns off the light. He settles back into bed. There's another long pause. Del clears his throat, loud and graphic, and then he repeats it. And Neil says to him, "What are you doing? Clearing my pipes? Why? I'm doing it for you. Don't bother. You like loud snoring? No. Then let me clear my pipes." Del snorts a couple more times. The room falls silent for another long beat. Neil? What? There's a long pause. I have to fart something fierce. Del continues by saying, "Hey, I'm just being honest, for Christ's sakes. I could have just sneaked it in on you."
And we're back to off-gassing, just like that.
There you go. See, the apparently. I'm glad they cut that out. I think it would have been just too much. The what Dell does this minute is enough. You know, the way that he is constantly upping the everything that's going on slightly, you know, by the way that he's clearing his throat and clearing his nose and everything like that, just little by little, it just works really well. I don't think they needed to go the extra step in passing
Yeah,
gas, excuse
I think
me.
it takes us down to a junior high level at some
Yes,
point.
correct.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I love something sophomore, but it wouldn't have worked here.
Yeah, not at all. Not at all. All right. So on every Wednesday, my guest will give his or her top five movies by John Hughes. So we call today Hughes Hump Day.
Hughes Hump Day. Okay, now when I was looking around at this a little bit, I realized that, do you know, John Hughes only has eight movies that he directed.
That is correct.
Okay, so I had to go with a lot of movies that he either wrote or did the screenplay or
That is fine.
whatever. So, again, going from five to one, number five is one that's off the beaten path for most people, but John Hughes wrote this, and it's a 1991 film called Dutch. Are you familiar with this one?
Yes, of course I am.
Okay, Ed O'Neill
Ed
and
O'Neill, of course.
Al Bundy fame, yeah. And there's a lot of planes, trains, and automobiles in that movie if you watch it. It's a lot of a road movie. Replace Neil and Del with, guy dating the kid's mom, and he goes to pick up the kid at boarding school, and the kid hates him, and hilarity ensues. Okay, number four is this movie, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Number three is a 1989 movie that was written and directed by John Hughes, and also features John Candy, and that would be Uncle Buck. How do you not love Uncle Buck? And I identify with Uncle Buck because he's a large frame gentleman and he's a gambler. So,
There you go.
that just hits home for me. Alluded to this movie, to the number two movie on this list a little earlier. This is a movie that John Hughes did the screenplay for, and that's 1983's National Lampoon Vacation.
Okay.
And number one, and this might be where the age difference between you and I might pose an issue, but my number one movie on this list is 1985's Breakfast Club.
Why would
And
that cause any problems here?
well, because I think that movie makes absolutely no sense if you weren't in high school in 1985.
I was.
You
Wait.
were.
No, I wasn't. I was in fifth grade. You're right. But I saw it then, and I
You
saw
saw
it so
it
many times. Yes. It's
now
one of the complaints I
without
have about my parents that for some reason they let me see movies like that when I was 11. But I loved it then, and I still love it now. It's one of my favorite movies.
were you still in Michigan at this time?
Yes, I was.
Okay.
And I wasn't in
So
Schermer, Illinois.
okay, but so
No,
you didn't go to Israel until later on.
no, no, no.
Okay. So the age difference is in play, but did because if you watch that movie and you're in high school, I think it says something different to you. Like, especially, I think it's worse if you're older, because I know people older than me watch that movie and don't get it at all.
Right. No, I agree with you on that. But I loved it then, and I still love it now when I watch it. I actually watched it a few years ago with my wife, who didn't grow up in America, and she's like, "What is this all about?" She didn't get it.
Who's your favorite character?
Mine? Ooh, that's a very good question. I would probably say the basket case, Ally Sheedy.
The bat. Ally Sheedy, yeah. My wife identifies with her. My favorite character is one nobody else picks, and that is the janitor.
Ooh.
Because the janitor gives them the speech about, you guys don't think I'm anything, but I'm the eyes and ears of this place. I know all your little secrets. I know all your business.
It's true.
I thought that was great.
All right. Excellent. So every day we have a feature off the beaten track where my guest and myself will give a little adventure or misadventure that may have happened to one of us over the course of our lives. So why don't you continue with the tease that you started earlier with the airport and
the O'Hare airport story. And this is because I'm super smart and have no ability to plan ahead. There was a point in time in my life when I was working overseas for a large Fortune 500 IT company, and I was based in London at the time. Well, I got some time off around the holidays, and so I decided to come back to the U.S. And the genius that I am, I booked a flight from London Heathrow to Chicago O'Hare the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Ooh.
Ooh. Now, what tends to happen? You're from Michigan. I live in Indiana. What's something that can happen in late November around the Great Lakes?
Snow.
Bingo. So, and with the hub and spoke way that the airlines work, if it snows anywhere in the upper Midwest, what happens to air travel everywhere?
Rack 'em, pack 'em, stack 'em.
Exactly. So, long story short, not only does it take me much longer than normal to even get to Chicago, once I get there, there are ground-stopping flights everywhere, and unfortunately, I need to make a connection to get to Minneapolis. So, it's very clear that I am not going to be able to get a flight to Minneapolis, so I actually end up having to find a rental car and drive all the way across Wisconsin in some of that fine November snow, all because I can't plan.
Well, you could have gone to Neil and Susan's house. Maybe they would have had some room for you.
Well, yeah, Neil clearly wasn't there yet. The problem is this was before I had a smartphone with Google. So I couldn't have just like looked up her address, say, hey, Susan, popping on over.
It's true. Good point.
Besides, she probably would have been cranky because she clearly didn't get any sleep the night before.
That's true also. But she'd have J-Dub show up at her front door. So that might put a smile on her face. You never know.
Okay. I've just spent 10 hours on a transatlantic flight. I'm pissed off at half the world. Hi, complete stranger knocking on your door. Nothing could go wrong here.
All right. So why don't you now give us your sports analogy for this episode?
Well, again, this is all about when you stick two guys together. We've kind of already alluded to this. Again, it's like, when you have road teams in sports and they put the odd personalities together to see what happens if they do get along or if they don't get along. In this case, it's very obvious that Neil and Dell do not get along. So if you're a football coach, what would you do with two guys you would room together that clearly can't be in the same room together? What would you do with them?
You put them together.
Exactly. So you may not, I know you're not really a sports guy, so obviously you've never been a football coach at any point in your life.
No.
But
not in this life.
If I may pay you a compliment, you're clearly enough of a sadist to be a very good one. So
I'm a sadist? Wow.
Taking the two guys that want to kill each other and sticking them back together? Yeah.
All right. Great. So you want to tell people once again how they can get in touch with you?
Well, at sadomasochism.com. No, I didn't know. Dubsism, the most interesting independent sports blog on the web, where you can get stories like this and much, much more. Dubsism, first page search result on Google. You can get me at dubsism@yahoo.com email. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, you name it. I'm out there. Search Dubsism. You'll find me.
All right. Excellent. And as for me, just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, go to our website. And obviously, please go and rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher that you might be using to listen to this show. So JW, you feel like you want to come back again tomorrow?
Absolutely. If I can get a flight from O'Hare.
And see what Neil is going to do when he jumps up from that bed.
Absolutely.
All right, well, until tomorrow, you're fine.
And if you fly from O'Hare anytime in the winter, you're fine.